KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS Falls Pass.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
They would just criminalize anyone who would participate in a protest. That was the moment where students were like, we need to do something more.
Voice of Mahmoud Khalil, the Columbia student protest negotiator who was seized by federal agents 3 weeks ago and remains locked up in an ICE jail in Louisiana. He's featured in The Encampments, a new documentary on the nationwide student uprising against U.S. support for Israel's war on Gaza. As the Trump administration escalates its crackdown on international students, we'll speak to two other encampment leaders at Columbia, as well as the film's producer. But first, the four-time Grammy-winning hip-hop artist Macklemore, who's the executive producer of The Encampments.
So moved by their bravery and taking over Hamilton Hall, you know, being reminded of resistance movements of the past, of seeing that the students have never been wrong. They have always been on the right side of history, and look at what they're doing again. Look at what they are doing again.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A 7.7 magnitude earthquake has hit central Burma, also known as Myanmar, with powerful tremors felt across Thailand and China. At least 20 people have been reported dead after the quake struck near Mandalay, Burma's second largest city, followed by a strong 6.4 aftershock 11 minutes later. Hospital patients were forced to evacuate to a parking lot, many still hooked up to intravenous drips and oxygen tanks as the earthquake rattled the city. Buildings were left in ruins while power lines and several bridges collapsed. Dozens of injured people have been rushed to the hospital. Burma's military regime has declared a state of emergency across six regions, including in the capital, Naypyidaw. Burma is one of Asia's poorest nations, still reeling from a devastating war sparked by a military coup in 2021. Humanitarian aid groups have warned of challenges in assessing the true toll of the damage and accessing impacted communities due to the ongoing conflict between the Burmese military and other militia groups. Electricity and communication lines are also down. In Thailand, at least three people were reported dead in Bangkok when a 30-story skyscraper that was under construction collapsed. Dozens remain buried. Pre-dawn attacks by Israel have killed at least 14 people in Gaza. In total, more than 830 Palestinians in Gaza, many of them children, have been killed by Israeli fire after Israel unilaterally shattered the ceasefire less than 2 weeks ago. Over a dozen aid workers have been killed or gone missing in recent days, including workers from UNRWA, Palestine Red Crescent Society, and World Central Kitchen. Israel's also escalating its attacks in Lebanon, where it's repeatedly violated the ceasefire agreed to in November. A strike this morning in the southern town of Kfar Tibnit has killed at least one person and injured eight others, including children. Meanwhile, scenes of chaos are being reported in the capital, Beirut, after Israel issued warnings to residents in the Hadath neighborhood it was about to bomb the area. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio confirmed the revoked visa of Rumeysa Öztek, a Tufts PhD student who was abducted on the streets of Somerville, Massachusetts this week by plainclothes federal agents. Öztek was targeted for writing a student op-ed about Tufts' response to Gaza solidarity protests. Rubio told reporters her case is part of a much larger scheme.
Might be more than 300 at this point. We do it every day. Every time I find one of these lunatics, I take away their visa.
You're saying it could be more than 300?
Sure, I hope. At some point, I hope we run out because we've gotten rid of all of them. But we're looking every day for these lunatics that are tearing things up. And by the way, we want to get rid of gang members, too.
In related news, a federal court in Newark is hearing arguments from the lawyers of Mahmoud Khalil today as they argue for his case to be transferred to New Jersey and for his release from federal custody. Khalil, a former protest leader and negotiator at Columbia's encampments, was first detained, taken to New Jersey after he was arrested by ICE agents at his home in Manhattan earlier this month. He was in Columbia housing. The U.S. has reached an agreement with the Colombian government that would allow the two countries to share biometric data collected from immigrants and asylum seekers. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem praised the deal, claiming the measure would target members of criminal organizations. Colombia has become a hub for Venezuelan immigrants and others as they journey north to the United States. The agreement signals a major shift within the government of Colombian President Gustavo Petro, who had previously signaled he would not collaborate with Trump's inhumane immigration crackdown. In El Salvador, protesters took to the streets of the capital, San Salvador, to mark 3 years since President Nayib Bukele enacted a state of exception that limits constitutional protections and grants unlimited powers to Salvadoran armed forces to arrest people suspected of being gang members. The policy has also been used to target human rights advocates, land and water defenders, and others critical of Bukele's government. Some 85,000 Salvadorans have been arrested and jailed over the past 3 years without due process as their relatives demand their release. Human rights groups have documented gross violations, with dozens of Salvadorans reported dead in police custody. Tens of thousands are being indefinitely held at the same maximum security mega prison complex where the Trump administration unlawfully sent hundreds of Venezuelan immigrants and asylum seekers from the U.S.
We condemn arbitrary actions taken by President Donald Trump and followed by de facto President Nayib Bukele. We think it's a policy to criminalize poverty, a xenophobic policy. The fact that the Salvadoran state submits to these kinds of measures is an absurd submission to the criminalizing policy of the U.S.
In Turkey, police forces deployed pepper spray, rubber bullets, water cannons on student protesters who gathered in Istanbul Thursday, defying a ban on demonstrations. Massive protests have continued in Turkey for over a week, following the jailing of Istanbul's mayor, Ekrem İmamoğlu, seen as the biggest rival to President Recep Tayyip Erdogan ahead of elections. Over 1,900 protesters have been arrested since last week. Meanwhile, the Turkish government's escalating its crackdown on journalists, imposing a 10-day broadcast ban on an opposition TV channel.
Very harsh penalties have been issued to silence the opposition and threaten those who broadcast freely. Unfortunately, RT UK and this government is not only blacking out channels, it is also blacking out universities, young people, and their hopes.
Turkey Thursday deported a BBC reporter amidst President Erdogan's crackdown on the press. Mark Lowen was taken from his Istanbul hotel Wednesday and detained for 17 hours before being removed from Turkey. U.S. airstrikes pounded at least 40 locations across Yemen early today, including in the capital Sana'a, as the Trump administration continues its military campaign against the Houthis. At least 7 people were injured, according to early on the ground reports. A coalition of advocacy groups, Dawn, Action Corps, and Just Foreign Policy are demanding an end to the U.S. attack, saying they violate the U.N. Charter and that, quote, Congress should stop strikes on Yemen and uphold its sole authority to declare war under Article 1 of the Constitution and the 1973 War Powers Resolution, unquote. At least 57 people have been killed since the U.S. bombing started on March 15th after Houthi fighters said they would resume Red Sea cargo attacks over Israel's renewed all-out war on Gaza. Federal Judge James Boasberg has ordered top officials, including Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, National Security Advisor Mike Waltz, Vice President J.D. Vance, and Secretary of State Marco Rubio to preserve all communications sent on a Signal group chat in the lead up to the March 15th attack on Yemen. The watchdog group American Oversight sued over the official's use of Signal for the exchange, which accidentally included the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic magazine. Attorney General Pam Bondi has indicated the Justice Department is not planning to investigate the matter, despite growing bipartisan calls. Meanwhile, Axios is reporting Minnesota Democrat Congressmember Ilhan Omar is planning to introduce articles of impeachment against Pete Hegseth, Mike Waltz, and CIA Director John Ratcliffe. The Department of Health and Human Services announced it's cutting 10,000 jobs. Combined with the wave of early retirements and buyouts since Trump came to power, the department will lose roughly a quarter of its workforce, going from 82,000 down to 62,000 workers. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said agencies will also be consolidated as part of the plan. The cuts will gut key agencies, including the CDC, FDA, and NIH, and set back decades of advances in public health, many charge. Washington Democratic Senator Patty Murray said, quote, "In the middle of worsening nationwide outbreaks of bird flu and measles, not to mention a fentanyl epidemic, Trump is wrecking vital health agencies with the precision of a bull in a china shop," the senator said. This comes as a leaked White House memo shows the Trump administration's preparing to lay off between 8 to 50% of federal workers across 22 agencies under the first phase of DOGE cuts. The plan includes axing half the staff at Housing and Urban Development, 30% of the staff of the IRS, and 8% of Justice Department staff. On Tuesday, House Speaker Mike Johnson escalated Republican attacks on judges in the court system, telling reporters Congress could attempt to eliminate federal courts it disagrees with.
We do have authority over the federal courts, as you know. We can eliminate an entire district court. We have power funding over the courts and all these other things.
President Trump Thursday withdrew New York Congressmember Lee Stefanik's nomination for UN ambassador, citing fears Republicans could come closer to losing their narrow margin in the House if Stefanik's seat goes up for a special election. This comes after Pennsylvania Democrats won two state elections this week, including a Senate seat in a district that voted for Trump over Kamala Harris by more than 15 points in November. Republicans now hold 218 seats in the House of Representatives. Democrats have 213, and there are four vacant House seats. A New York County clerk refused to enforce a fine from Texas issued to penalize a New York doctor for prescribing online abortion pills to a Texas patient. The Ulster County clerk cited New York State's shield laws. The case is expected to eventually land at the U.S. Supreme Court. In labor news, Trump has signed an executive order stripping union rights from hundreds of thousands of federal workers, ordering 18 departments to stop engaging in any collective bargaining. Trump cited so-called national security concerns. The American Federation of Government Employees is challenging the order in court and said in a statement, quote, "Trump's threat to unions and working people across America is clear. Fall in line or else. These threats will not work," unquote. The Environmental Protection Agency has created a direct email address for industrial polluters like coal-fired power plants to easily request exemptions from the federal government to Clean Air Act rules. The rules include limits on mercury production and other pollutants known to damage human health and the environment. Climate Action Campaign likened the process to a, quote, "gold-plated, get-out-of-permitting-free card," unquote. Robert McChesney, co-founder of the advocacy group Free Press and a tireless defender of media and democracy, has died at the age of 72. Bob McChesney was a prolific author with nearly three dozen books on media democracy and digital rights, including Rich Media, Poor Democracy. He was also a beloved professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Bob McChesney appeared on Democracy Now! Multiple times over the years. In 2016, he addressed corporate consolidation and control over the internet.
We have to really have a serious discussion in this country about why do we pay so much more for broadband access and cell phone service than almost any other country in the world, sometimes by, you know, double, triple the rates for crappier service. Is having these private companies, who are sort of the equivalent of the health insurance companies, gouging us and setting super high prices and paying off the regulators and politicians, a very rational way for a free society to have this central component of our communication infrastructure controlled?
That was Robert McChesney, speaking in 2016. He's just died at the age of 72. You can see all of our interviews with him at democracynow.org. And in his latest attack on cultural institutions, President Trump signed an executive order Thursday appointing J.D. Vance to eliminate, quote, divisive race-centered ideology, unquote, from Smithsonian museums, research centers, and the National Zoo. The order, called Restoring Truth and Sanity to American History, aims to remove exhibits and programs that portray U.S. history and values as, quote, inherently harmful and oppressive. It cites in particular the National Museum of African American History and Culture, which opened in 2016. The Smithsonian operates independently since it was established as a public-private partnership by Congress in 1846. It receives roughly 60% of its funding from the federal government. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, the encampments. We look at a new documentary on the Campus Gaza Solidarity protests and speak to four-time Grammy-winning hip-hop artist Macklemore, who's the film's executive producer. Stay with us.
Yeah. The people, they won't leave. What is threatening about divesting and wanting peace? The problem isn't the protests, it's what they're protesting. It goes against what our country is funding. Block the barricade until Palestine is free. Block the barricade until Palestine is free. When I was 7, I learned a lesson from Cuban Easy E. What was it again? Oh yeah, the police. Actors and badges protecting property in a system that was designed by white supremacy. But the people are in the streets. You can pay off Meta, you can't pay off me. Politicians who serve by any means. AIPAC, Koofy, and all the companies. You see, we sell fear around the land of the free. But this generation here is about to cut the strings. You can ban TikTok, take us out the algorithm. But it's too late, we've seen the truth, we bear witness. Seen the rubble, the buildings, the mothers and the children. And all the men that you murdered. And then we see how you spin it. Who gets the right to defend and who gets the right of resistance? It's always been about dollars and the color of your pigment. But white supremacy is finally on blast, screaming free Palestine to their home at last. We see the lies.
Hinds Hall by Macklemore. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Trump administration's escalating its crackdown on international students. On Thursday, Secretary of State Marco Rubio defended the State Department's role in the arrest of Tufts University PhD student Rumeysa Öztürk, who was seized on Tuesday by a group of masked federal agents on the streets of Somerville as she was walking to dinner. A year ago, Öztürk had co-written a piece in the student newspaper criticizing Tufts' response to Palestinian solidarity protests on campus. She's now jailed in Louisiana. Massachusetts Democratic Congressmember Ayanna Pressley denounced Öztürk's abduction, saying she was, quote, kidnapped in plain sight. Pressley wrote, quote, she's a peaceful protester, grad student, and my constituent who has a right to free speech and due process. Now she's a political prisoner. Free her now, the congressmember wrote. Marco Rubio was questioned about Öztürk's abduction on Thursday.
A Turkish student in Boston was detained and handcuffed on the street by plainclothes agents. A year ago, she wrote an opinion piece about the Gaza war. Could you help us understand what the specific action she took led to her visa being revoked?
Yeah.
And what was your State Department's role in that process?
We revoked her visa. It's an F-1 visa, I believe. I think it's crazy. I think it's stupid for any country in the world to welcome people into their country that are going to go to your universities as visitors. They're visitors. And say, I'm going to your universities to start a riot. I'm going to your universities to take over a library and harass people. I don't care what movement you're involved in. Why would any country in the world allow people to come and disrupt? Now, we gave you a visa to come and study and get a degree, not to become a social activist that tears up our university campuses. And if we've given you a visa and then you decide to do that, we're going to take it away.
This week, thousands of students and faculty and community members in Somerville, Massachusetts, have gathered to protest her abduction. Secretary of State Marco Rubio went on to say the State Department has revoked more than 300 student visas across the country, Nearly 3 weeks ago, unidentified federal agents arrested Mahmoud Khalil, a leader of the Gaza Solidarity Encampments at Columbia University. He was also a negotiator with the university. He was a permanent legal resident and a green card holder. He's now being held in an ICE jail in Jena, Louisiana. Khalil is featured prominently in a new documentary called The Encampments. It's an inside look at Columbia University Gaza Solidarity Encampment and the nationwide student uprising against U.S. support for Israel's war on Gaza. This is the film's trailer.
We're here to discuss the little Gazas that have risen up on campuses across America.
There is a movement to radicalize young people.
Can you believe they are chanting about the Enfantada in New York City?
I really believe they are brainwashed.
There was a very concerted effort by the media to portray things a certain way and refuse to discuss Gaza. Columbia is materially invested in the genocide in Gaza. Don't want our money to go towards Palestinian death.
I was born and raised in a Palestinian refugee camp. The university was cracking down on Palestinian activism on campus.
It's completely farcical to imply that in any way, like, Jewish people were being persecuted.
I have never felt more proud to be Jewish than when I was pushing our university to divest from genocide.
They would just criminalize anyone who would participate in a protest. That was the moment where students were like, we need to do something more.
The people they won't leave is what is threatening about divesting them on their peace.
The university would say like, oh, you're overestimating your power. I remember like telling them there are 60 universities setting up encampments across the United States.
We got Yale holding it down right now on live.
What you willing to risk? What you willing to give? What if you were in Gaza? What if those were your kids?
In 68, the students at Columbia took over the campus mainly in protest of the war in Vietnam. Columbia talks about how it was okay then, but not okay now.
Bravery is very contagious. We kind of watched Columbia in awe, and we knew we were next.
The only weapon they have is fear, and we call their bluff. They have nothing! Yeah!
The trailer for The Encampments, a new documentary produced by Watermelon Pictures and Breakthrough News. Later in the show, we'll be joined by two protest leaders at Columbia. One of them was just expelled by Columbia, a fifth-year grad student. We'll also be joined by the film's producer. But first, we turn to the four-time Grammy-winning musician Macklemore, who served as the film's executive producer. In May of last year, Macklemore released the song Hinz Hall, inspired by the pro-Palestinian student protesters at Columbia University, who occupied a campus building and gave it that name, in honor of the six-year-old Palestinian child, Hin Rajab. She was killed by Israeli forces in Gaza in January of 2024 in a car alongside of her family members. Prior to her death, Hin was on the phone for hours with emergency workers pleading for help, pleading for them to come and save her. Macklemore announced all proceeds from the song would be donated to the UN's Palestine Relief Agency, or UNRWA. In September, Macklemore released a sequel to the song, Hinz Hall 2, with help from the Gazan rapper MZ Abdul, a teenager, and Palestinian-American singer Anis. I spoke to Macklemore on Thursday and asked him about how he became involved in the Encampments documentary.
Lana Hadid had reached out to me. I had seen her in San Francisco at Palestinian Day back in the fall, and she mentioned the film then. And I watched it and was blown away. What BTN was able to capture, I think was a moment in American history that we will come back to time and time again when we look at resistance movements. What the students did at Columbia University was deeply inspiring to me on on really every level, but it came at this point in the genocide in Gaza that I think a lot of us were feeling a certain fatigue around. What can we do? Our voices, this isn't working. And what the students did by peacefully protesting and advocating for Palestinian life and demanding that their university disclose information about the investments that they were making, their ties to the genocide that was underway, and coming together and rallying for humanity in that moment was one that rekindled a flame, I think, in all of us and definitely in myself of the students are always at the forefront of resistance movements. If you look at American history, the students are always those that are willing to risk, being demerited, being facing deportation, as we see with Mahmoud, and really spearheading what was to come, which was getting millions of Americans back out into the streets and demanding for a permanent end to this genocide.
You know, the film is coming out, and now the people who are featured in the film are speaking alongside it. Grant Miner, who's just been expelled from Columbia, a graduate student there. Sweda Polat, who alongside Mahmoud Khalil negotiated with the Columbia administration. I mean, originally, Mahmoud Khalil and the others were going to be live at the Q&As after the film coming out this weekend. Now he can't be reached. He's in ICE jail in Louisiana. And you have this latest news of Rumeysa Öztürk, the Turkish graduate student Tufts that is kidnapped off the streets of Somerville, Massachusetts, as she's ending her daily fast, as she's going to iftar with her friends, and she's taken by six masked ICE agents. Can you talk about the latest news as your songs come out and the encampments, the documentary is being released?
I don't know if I exactly have words for what's happening. I think that we are under the utmost threat that we have seen as Americans using our voice. Our First Amendment is completely being stripped away from us in real time in a way that is scary, in a way that is instilling fear, or its attempts to instill fear. And you see real life, very serious consequences to those advocating for peace. You see it with Mahmoud. You see it at Tufts yesterday. We've been seeing it the last couple of weeks, and people are scared. People that have been very at the forefront and not even at the forefront of this movement that are being targeted right now and risking deportation. And it I think what it's serving for me in this moment is this rally cry, right? Because if they're coming for Mahmoud, and Mahmoud, as you see in the encampments film, is just this very diplomatic, coming from the heart, Palestinian refugee from Syria that you know, university student at Columbia, super educated, super tapped in, and a leader. And he is a threat. They are trying to use Mahmoud and everyone else that's been abducted the last couple of weeks as examples of this is what happens when you go against our country. This is what happens when you go against genocide. This is what happens when you criticize Israel. And the narrative that is being spun around this being hateful or a form of terrorism or anti-Semitic is the furthest thing from the truth. These are human beings that are advocating for Palestinian life, that are leaders, that are brave, that are willing to risk their own freedom for the liberation of the Palestinian people. And we, as those in community, this is a call to all of us to step up in this moment, to realize that our First Amendment is being compromised and that we must come to the forefront and ensure that this stops.
Macklemore, I was wondering if you can share with people your own journey. Born Ben Haggerty, you're now a four-time Grammy Award-winning rapper. And if you can talk about what changed you and if you were afraid to speak out and what it meant for you.
I was on the road in the States on tour when October 7th happened. And the nature of being on the road is that you have a lot of time in the day. You know, I work for an hour and a half at night doing the show. And as videos started to come out of Gaza, and to be honest, like I of course knew about Palestine, I knew about Israel, I knew there was a quote unquote conflict. I didn't know about the 75 years of oppression. I didn't know about the Nakba. I didn't know what Zionism meant. I didn't know about the apartheid state and the system that is Israel. I did not know about the open air prison that was Gaza. I did not know. And I started to learn. And once I started to learn in conjunction with the videos that were coming out of Palestine, something happened in me. There was an awakening and a remembering of what actually matters in this world. And I think that there was that first couple weeks of like, How am I watching this and no one else, how are we all watching this and no one in the music industry is saying anything? I feel crazy and I wanted to say something, but I would have conversations with friends and they'd be like, yeah, dude, if you say that, you're gonna get canceled. If you say anything around Palestine, they'll come for you, they'll cancel you. And at a certain point, I remember I saw a fellow artist and friend Kehlani, and she had said something and someone told me she was going hard for Palestine. And I went to her Instagram page and I saw that. And as it says in the film, bravery is contagious. And I saw Kehlani and I was like, OK, that's all I needed was one other person stepping up and saying this is wrong. And it gave me kind of that push to make a first statement. And I haven't really turned back since. I believe it's my moral obligation, not just as an artist, not as someone with a platform or four-time Grammy, like all that is just labels. What this really comes down to is humans. Human beings, humanity, advocating for the most marginalized. When we strip all of it away, when we take away what, you know, what's at stake here, what, you know, I'm done playing the game of capitalism and let me walk the straight and narrow so I don't offend this person and that person. And that was an unlearning, you know, that was an unlearning for me to be like, you know what? I am not tied to any record label. I don't care about a brand deal. I don't care. I've been so lucky in my career that I'm financially stable enough that I don't have anything to risk that's going to actually jeopardize like putting food on my table. I need to step up in this moment right now. And I felt called. I felt called by my ancestors. I felt called from those who came before. I felt called by all the people that have put their freedom on the line for the freedom of all of us. And I'm not going to stop.
The film, among others, features Grant Miner, who's what, a fifth, six-year graduate student at Columbia, who is a Jewish American, now expelled. Were you afraid of being, as you were talking about, being called anti-Semitism when so many of the activists around the country who are fighting for Palestine are Jewish?
Of course, I was afraid of it. But you realize this has never been about Jewish people. This is at the very root, at the core of this resistance movement is beautiful Jewish people in solidarity with Palestinians. As Mahmoud as Mahmoud says in the film, Palestinian liberation is Jewish liberation. Jewish liberation is Palestinian liberation. They are not separate. But this term anti-Semitic is being used in this way to instill fear, to create division, to continue the absolute genocide that is taking place in Gaza, to center that fear and use it as a mechanism in which to silence the people. And what we have seen is education is the greatest tool. It's the greatest tool in this moment. The young people, at a certain point, we know what it is. We see it. Young people are educated. They know the difference between Judaism and Zionism. They are not linked. Zionism is a political ideology. It has nothing to do with the Torah. We know this. But the way that it is being spun in the media as anything but a movement of love and of solidarity is completely false. So shout out to Grant, shout out to all, to JVP, to If Not Now, to Israelism, the film. There's so many Jewish people right now in our country stepping up and dispelling this insane notion of anti-Semitism. They're actually showing the beauty of collective liberation.
Macklemore, can you talk about the making of Hinds Hall and Hinds Hall 2? Start with Hinds Hall and why Rajab Hinds, her story, the six-year-old girl, touched you so much. It became basically an anthem of the encampment movement around the country.
I hear the 911 tape of Hinds, and I hear my own six-year-old daughter. You know, I have a six-year-old, she just turned seven. Hinden gets to turn seven. I hear her crying out. I cannot help but imagine my own six-year-old and it makes me emotional even just saying it. I can't imagine my six-year-old making that 911 call and pleading for someone to please come and save her, and the way that her life was ended by IDF bullets. Over 100 of them. I can't make sense of that. I can't make sense of that world. And really, the song came from a place of, I had no other way to process this. You know, writing has always been a means of me trying to process this world and get deeper into my own truth and this human experience. And I was so moved by what the students at Columbia were doing. I was so moved by their bravery and taking over Hamilton Hall, you know, being reminded of resistance movements of the past, of seeing that the students have never been wrong. They have always been on the right side of history. And look at what they're doing again. Look at what they are doing again. They are leading not only our country, but showing the rest of the world what it looks like to risk all, you know. Again, they paid, who knows how much money they paid to go to college there at Columbia University. They are uprooting this notion of, I need to protect myself, and they stepped in. And I think that it came at a time where we were all feeling that fatigue, and Columbia reminded us of what is possible. And it spread. It spread to universities all across the country. That news got back to those kids in Gaza. They saw, you know what? Although the U.S. is literally bombing us, Israel is literally killing us, there are people out there that know that our lives are worth the exact same as anyone else in this world. Those kids in Gaza felt seen. And the students at Columbia reminded me of what it means to show up. And I remember I came home one day, I went to yoga, and I left yoga and my heart was feeling open, and I heard this sample by Feruz that my friend Tamer had played me. And it came on in the car, and it was divine timing. I came right down here to this chair that I'm in, and that song wrote itself. You know, I believe that songs that come from source, write themselves. I happened to have the pen in my hand at that moment.
Could you share a few lines with us of Hinds Hall?
The people, they won't leave. What is threatening about divesting and wanting peace? The problem isn't the protest. It's what they're protesting. It goes against what our country is funding. Block the barricade until Palestine is free. Block the barricade until Palestine is free. When I was 7, I learned a lesson from Cuban Eazy-E. What was it again? Oh, yeah, F the police.
And then Hinds Hall 2, you made that with the help of a Gazan teenager, a rapper named MC Abdul, and a Palestinian-American singer, Anis. Can you talk about them?
I wanted to continue. I think it was important for me to give Palestinian artists a voice that was maybe a voice through my platform. Obviously, both those artists have amazing platforms and voices, but I think that my demographic is different, and I wanted to ensure that like everyone was able to come and lend their perspective on what's going on right now, and have it be as heard by as many people as possible. Anis and I had been going back and forth, and we had kind of both talked about like, yo, we got to do something, we got to say something, you know, we got to make a song. And it was the perfect opportunity. And right after Hinds Hall came out, it was probably within a couple of days, I was in New Zealand, and I hit Anis and I was like, bro, we got to do a remix to this. And I started making the beat. We started sending things back and forth, and slowly, in the next 4 months, the song is made. My guy Ghazi from Empire Records put me in touch with MC Abdul, 15 years old, from Palestine, who's just a phenomenal MC, phenomenal person. And he sent his verse in, and just the imagery, you know, he's able to tell a story that I'm not able to tell. He's able to tell a very personal story about losing family, about getting out, about the Palestinian struggle from the perspective of a Palestinian that's from Palestine. And that voice needs to be heard. So to me, it's just, we are storytellers. Art is the greatest form of resistance, or a form of resistance. And Hinds Hall 2 was birthed out of that resistance, and coming from a place of we are going to tell our story and not have it be told by anybody else.
Macklemore, what do you hope will happen with the film, The Encampments, that's just opening today in different theaters from Los Angeles to New York?
I hope it wakes up people's hearts. I hope it reminds people, it serves as a deep reminder that we are all connected, that it dispels any notion of division. And yet what it actually shows is true solidarity. I hope that it rewrites this history. I think this history, the truth will be our history, as much as it's attempted to be censored right now. But I think that it will remind people, again, that the students are never wrong. It rekindles bravery, it rekindles courage, and it's a call to action. We need to get mobilized, organized, and we are in urgent, dire times that require us as human beings coming together and fighting against fascism, fighting against genocide. And the only way to do that is by opening up the heart and realizing that collective liberation is the only solution.
Four-time Grammy-winning musician Macklemore. He's the executive producer of the new documentary, The Encampments, which is opening in the next week in New York, in Los Angeles, and beyond. Coming up, we speak to two Columbia graduate students, one who's just been expelled, as well as the producer of The Encampments. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
of every massacre we suffered. The Nakba, Sabra, Shatila, and Rafa. My people have died a million times in the struggle. Still they rise from the tide like a rose through the rubble. I see God himself in the eye of a refugee who'd rather die a martyr than live a life on the sea. So if I'm not allowed to say from the river to the sea, then from the Rhine to the sea, Palestine will be free.
Still they know that Hins Hall 2 by Macklemore featuring Anise and the teen MC Abdul and Amirzar. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue our look at this new documentary, The Encampments, about the historic Columbia University Gaza Solidarity Encampment and the nationwide student uprising against U.S. support for Israel's war on Gaza. The film prominently features Mahmoud Khalil, the Columbia graduate student protest negotiator who was seized by federal agents 3 weeks ago and remains locked up in an ICE jail in Louisiana. There is a court hearing for him today in New Jersey. This is a clip of Mahmoud Khalil from the documentary.
I was approached the night of the encampment that I would be the person communicating with the administration. The organizers trusted me, given my background in terms of like working in diplomacy, either at the British Embassy or here at the UN. We discussed who's best to support me, and we felt that Swede is the perfect person.
The university wanted to shut down the encampment in any way that it could. When it first started, they were like, let's not let them bring in water, let's shut down all of the gates, let's not let them bring in tents, let's not let them bring in blankets, because it was cold, it was freezing.
They underestimated the will of the students. They literally like feel that these are just kids. Through my conversation, I just felt how much the university is detached from reality. What university in the world want to invest in weapon manufacturers? Why would you do that? You're concerned with education. Like, we're literally giving you back the university to be a moral university. Every time in the negotiations when we told them that, they would say like, oh, you're overestimating your power or your influence. But then after the fourth day, they were just like so silent, because clearly it's a global movement. I remember like telling him like, at this point, there are 60 universities setting up encampments across the United States. They're just like waiting to hear what would happen at Columbia.
That was Mahmoud Khalil, the graduate student protest organizer and negotiator with the university, who's in this film featured in The Encampments. We're joined now by three guests. Munir Atala is the producer of The Encampments, head of production acquisitions at Watermelon Pictures. He was a Columbia adjunct professor of film last spring. Grant Miner is also with us, the president of the Student Workers of Columbia, UAW 2710. He was expelled by Columbia for taking part in the pro-Palestine campus protests. He was fired as a graduate worker one day before his union entered bargaining talks. He's president of the local UAW at the Columbia. And Sueda Polat is with us, graduate student in human rights at Columbia University. Along with Mahmoud, she negotiated between the student activists and the Columbia administration. Sueda, I want to begin with you. It's also where the film begins, very movingly, as you talk about why you even came to Columbia as a graduate student in human rights, that that's not a common major.
It most definitely isn't a common major. This is my graduate degree. Prior to that, I was in sociology. But before starting at Columbia University, I spent some time in Palestine, particularly in the West Bank. And I think it was just seeing the strangulation of life in Palestine, the squashing of people, and the regular indignities that they've been exposed to in their everyday life, I think was a very transformative political moment for me. And upon returning from the West Bank, I knew I wanted to work on the Palestinian liberation movement. And in the United States, Columbia University had the strongest record, particularly for Palestine, with the Center for Palestine Studies, as well as being like a host for so many scholars of Palestine, of Edward Said, of Joseph Massad, and so many other professors. And it was also known as being a protest school. And I felt that it would be the right fit, but I was sorely mistaken.
So how did you end up being a chief negotiator between the students and the university along with Mahmoud? So the two of you worked side by side as you met with the administration.
I think the first few days of the encampment particularly were very confusing for a lot of people. On the first night of the first encampment prior to the arrests is when the administration first reached out wanting to talk about what our demands were. At the time, like Mahmoud said in the documentary, he had a lot of experience in diplomacy, but he didn't want to go in alone. And some of my friends recommended me to meet with the administration with him.
And what do you mean he had experience in diplomacy?
I mean, he's been working at the Palestine mission at the United Nations. He's at SIPA, where he studies a lot of diplomacy, international relations.
The School of International Affairs at Columbia University.
And he's also, you know, he's 30 years old. He's very experienced. He's a diplomat through and through, so he was a good choice.
So I want to go to another clip from the film Encampments.
The genocide didn't start on October 7th, neither did the pro-Palestinian movement generally on campus. Students had already pushed like divestment referendums in previous years. We had voted on divestment referendums at various colleges within Columbia. All of them passed.
Immediately, the president sent out an email saying, we don't have actual general consensus amongst the student body or amongst our community, in which they include in the community the Columbia alumni.
Free Palestine!
Free Palestine!
Done everything we could think of. We did peaceful protest, that was ignored. We did strategic interruptions, that was ignored and punished. Students had written up this whole divestment proposal saying that it is not only possible, but would be easy, and that was just dismissed out of hand.
They changed all the protest rules. They wouldn't approve any of our events. They would just criminalize anyone who would participate in a protest.
If they were just going to ignore us, then we had to do something that couldn't possibly be ignored by the administration.
Another clip from the encampments, and one of the voices there was Grant Miner, the president of Student Workers of Columbia UAW 2710. He's been fired and expelled. A fifth-year grad student, Grant, you're also Jewish American. Can you talk about why you've participated in this and address directly the issue of somehow the encampments creating an anti-Semitic environment? When Democracy Now! Went to cover it, so many of the students involved were Jewish students.
Yes, I mean, why I participate in it, I mean, there's a number of reasons. I'm a labor organizer. It's really important to our members that we had a firm stance on this. We are a social justice union. UAW, more broadly, practices social justice unionism.
And you're a graduate instructor.
Yes. And so, you know, it was important that we were there. I think as a Jewish person as well, it was important to me that, you know, we be visible in the Palestine movement. And I guess to address the sort of, you know, specter of anti-Semitism in the encampments, I mean, to be honest with you, it's just not something I've ever experienced in the Palestine movement. The encampments in particular were enormously welcoming. We had, you know, services. The encampments coincided with Passover. There were actually members of the Jewish studies faculty that would come into the encampment and, you know, speak and be in community with Jewish students.
I wanted to go to another clip of the encampments with the Jewish student protesters at Columbia and their allies taking part in a Havdalah service. The clip features the Israeli-American rabbi, Avi Stein.
We are here, and if anyone here disagrees with me, you can tell me. But I think we are here because we are Jews, not just because we happen to be, because that is part of who we are, to fight for liberation of every human being, to know that every human being is a divine image. That is what we're doing right now. And we are separating ourselves from people who are somehow incapable of seeing that. We are fighting for the divine spark, for the Tzelem Elohim in every person. You're all so amazing, and it's an honor to be here with you.
If you're familiar with the Havdalah service, please sing loudly and proudly. If you're not, please sing loudly and proudly. It's very Jewish to not know the words and not know everything, but you'll catch on.
Da, da, da, da.
another clip from the encampments. Grant, you have just been expelled. That's not just losing your job. That's your 5 years that you've been a graduate student. You are not getting your PhD. On what grounds were you expelled?
I was expelled for participating in pro-Palestinian protests. I mean, functionally, I was expelled for speaking out against genocide. And, you know, it was really shocking. I mean, I learned this as I was away doing research on a departmental grant. It was tough to learn that Columbia was, you know, more than willing to just totally concede to Trump, to throw its students under the bus, to throw international students especially under the bus, you know, just to get back some, you know, some money and to please the administration.
I mean, this is a very frightening time. You not only have Mahmoud, who is jailed in Louisiana, you have another student who has left the country because her visa was revoked, the star student. Munir Atallah, you are the producer of the encampments. It's opening in what, New York, Los Angeles next week and beyond?
That's right. This is a film that's going to be opening here in New York this weekend, and then we'll take it nationwide next weekend. Already the demand has been very strong. I think people are eager to see the encampments from within, from the student perspective. Most of the coverage of the encampments to date has been from people who actually never even set foot on the encampments. Whereas for us, you know, I was an adjunct professor at Columbia last spring, and we witnessed the student movement.
So you're teaching film there.
Right, exactly. Actually a lab and documentary production. And some of our students even chose to cover this as part of their work. But, you know, what we witnessed...
I saw many of the Columbia journalism students say it was quite something what they were doing. They had a little more access than other reporters because the university had shut down the campus.
Yeah, no, I mean, Columbia has gone to every extent to try and censor this movement and be really a leader in repressing it as well. Let's not forget, this was the largest student movement in U.S. history. And, you know, the students have always been on the right side of history. Columbia's own history shows that. They were on the right side in the 1960s during the Civil Rights Movement. They were on the right side in the 90s in the fight against apartheid.
I wish Juan was joining me in this conversation. Juan Gonzalez, our co-anchor of Democracy Now, because he participated in the Columbia 1968, basically, you could say, encampment, occupation, and you go back and forth in the film.
That's right, you know, and just as the students stood on the right side of history in the past, so too are they standing on the right side of history today. And their demands for a disclosure of financial assets, their demand for Columbia to invest its multi-billion dollar endowment from arms companies, is not only a righteous and just demand, but it is inevitable. And the sooner Columbia sees that, the more embarrassment and shame it can save itself. You know, can you even call Columbia a university anymore? A university has the obligation to protect its students. A university has the obligation to stand by the core values of academic institutions, freedom of expression and speech.
Well, we're going to have to leave that question there, but the film comes out around the country starting tonight in New York and then going beyond. I want to thank you all for being with us. Munir Atallah, producer of the encampments, Grant Minor, president of student workers at Columbia UAW, just fired and expelled by Columbia, and Sueda Polat, graduate student in human rights at Columbia University. That does it for our broadcast. And we want to share our deepest condolences with Democracy Now! Co-host, dear friend Nermeen Sheikh, whose father passed earlier this morning. Najmuddin Sheikh was Pakistan's former foreign secretary, ambassador to many countries. The reason why Nermeen grew up around the world, he survived by his beloved wife, Rana, of more than half a century, his children, Nermeen and Nader. I'm so glad, Nermeen, your family was together for your dad's 85th birthday, and what a gift you gave him by being at his side with your brother and mother these last few painful weeks in Karachi. The funeral services for Najmuddin Sheikh are taking place in Karachi, Pakistan, as we broadcast. Blessings. Democracy Now! Produced with Mike Burke, Renee